You've landed on The Substance, a podcast aimed at being biblical, thoughtful, and human. Join us here every other week as we engage the culture without the culture war. I'm your host, Philip Marinello, saying thanks for joining us. There's lots and lots and lots of podcasts out there, plus lots of other things you could be doing with your time. So thank you to everybody who downloaded the show. Remember that if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, hitting that 5-star button, or on Apple Podcasts, if you take 30 or 60 seconds to write a quick review, that really does help us. One, we love hearing the feedback from you, but two, it also really helps new listeners find the show. So if that isn't something you've done, we would greatly appreciate that. Here at The Substance, every episode, we like to invite folks on who are smart, intelligent, kind, talented, involved in various fields, doing good work, and start a conversation with them. Previous guests include folks like Tim Whitaker from the New Evangelicals, Jamar Tisby, artists Stephanie Stalvey and Josh Nadeau of the Sword and Pencil account, and Tyler Huckabee. We've got over 150 episodes in our back catalog, so if you're new to the show, there's a lot of great stuff to catch up on. Actually, on Instagram, we have our top 10 most downloaded episodes from a while ago, so need to update that again there. But there's a lot of very good stuff in the vault if you are newer to the show. Today, I'm speaking with Margaret Bronson. Margaret is somebody who, in a very brief span of time, has had a pretty massive impact on my life and the life of a handful of friends. She calls herself a deconstruction doula, and really very similar to a doula if you're giving birth, if anyone has gone through that experience. Her ministry, her service, what she does for people now is just holds space for people to experience deconstruction and whatever comes after in a safe, in an empathetic and communal space. Back when we had Jonna Harris on the show, who hosts the Bodies Behind the Bus podcast, she put Margaret's work on my radar. And since then, I've known a number of people who have gone through her cohorts, and it's a very valuable, special thing. And I had a wonderful time speaking with her. So here is my conversation with Margaret. So, Margaret, glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And I guess I'll say here, I will probably have said this, we do pre-recorded intros, we'll probably have already mentioned this, but shout out to Jonna Harris for the initial connection. And that was a while ago, so I don't even track this timeline down. I wonder, when Jonna did The Substance, I wonder if my wife was already in your group. I don't know if she was.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Because I feel like we've only been in, I think Jonna preceded that. I'm not sure if that was an impetus. I guess I'll definitely be plugging, man, I re-listened, Margaret, to your Bodies Behind the Bus episode in the last couple days. And I went through all of the emotions, exhausted, frustrated, furious. I guess I am. I try not to be a very aggressive person, but Anna was like, not seriously, because I wasn't going to actually do anything, because I drive all over Kansas and Missouri for work, and like, I know the area. And she's like, Philip, just don't go down there and start any trouble. I was like, no, I'm not going to actually do that. But I was getting a little heated.
Yeah, well, and the crazy thing is we didn't even tell the worst parts. Like, that was the tame version for public consumption. Yeah.
Because the goal isn't to like stoke anger at the churches, but it's to tell the truth. Like, these places need to freaking do better.
Well, it's crazy when you just keep seeing the same patterns popping up all over the place. It's like, what is happening? Why are we saying one thing and acting another way?
Well, and I was struck by, to a certain degree, and we've talked about this, I've talked about this a little on the show, and so has my previous co-host. It was not at all to the degree and severity that you guys went through. But I mean, I've had my own experience in the evangelical conservative world of like being treated really, really well by a congregation. And then just like the leadership sometimes, and it's not always bad, but like they're just being this bizarre, like black mirror side to some of the leadership. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, not letting anybody off the hook, but it just seems clear, like you said, with the pattern, it's like, this is a problem of these systems. Like, yes, these men are responsible and some of them are more malicious than others, but like these systems are poisoned and like are creating these opportunities for men to behave horribly in some of those. Not to absolve anybody of personal responsibility, but it's not
just a
couple of bad apples kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I am waiting for someone to do a deep dive into the seminaries because my husband went to seminary and they definitely, it's like they teach theology, but the only class that they get that is anything that has anything to do with interpersonal relationships is like how to officiate a wedding and run a funeral.
Oh, that was his training?
Like that's about all they get. They don't get, you know, neuroscience or attachment theory or just like basic things that you'd think would be really important for a pastor to know, you know?
Yeah, when I did not complete my seminary degree, but I did a little over half of it. And for me, we did have one course that was like pastoral ministry because it was weird. I will say that there was lip service given to. Pastoral ministry isn't just preaching. But then there also is a bit of a lack of like that shepherding in like experientially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no internships. There's no test to like, you know, like certification. Like, yeah, we certify that this person knows how to interact with human beings. You know, there's nothing like that.
So, I mean, I guess I'll definitely link to the Bodies Behind the Bus episode for a little bit of the history. But for those who haven't listened or even those who have briefly, we'd just love to hear about kind of like not just the horrible trauma you guys had a couple years ago, but just like the background of where you come from. Like what's the spiritual experience and heritage that kind of was the foundational for you guys?
Yeah. So I am actually a survivor of serial religious trauma. It's just kind of like my whole life. I was raised in a theonomist reconstruction, quiverful, think shiny, happy people community. I got out of that. I was actually excommunicated out of that at 16. And 3 years later, got married to a pastor and became a pastor's wife in a mainstream evangelical, like, quote, normal kind of.
She said 3 years later, so at 19?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I told you I was raised quiverful. So, yeah. Married at 19 to a pastor, became a pastor's wife at 19. So,
wowie.
Became like person that people would go to for advice and like spiritual direction and stuff at 19. I didn't know anything. So, we were in three churches. We served in three churches together. And one of them we talk about in the Bodies Behind the Bus podcast. And then there was another one where there was a lot of trauma that came from it as well. And now I am married to, I mean, same person, but he's a very normal, boring job that pays the bills and doesn't require therapy to survive. And I love it.
I'm so happy. I'm glad that, I mean, just with all of his health issues, I'm glad that he's able to kind of, he got away from all that. Like I was getting fear. I was like, I mean, I know Kansas City. I was like, do I need to hook you guys up with some lawyers to kind of get right with some of this? Like it was deeply, deeply, deeply not right what happened to you guys.
And
then it just kind of, you're like, okay, like go fend for yourselves now, I guess. Like,
yeah,
that's such a wild Ryan position Ramsey. To be in.
Ryan Ramsey had an amazing post this week about the experience of being sick in church and that line that eventually you cross when they kind of, there's a pattern where they kind of give up on you. I'm not saying every church in every situation, but like it is in the work that I do, I see this pattern over and over again. You're allowed to be sick. You're allowed to have needs, but only up to a certain point. And then it's like, we're done with you because you're not getting better. And I don't know where that comes from or why we do that, but it is a pretty profound pattern that we're seeing coming out of these churches.
Well, I think it's kind of, I mean, we've talked about this before, that a lot of churches are run like corporations, and corporations don't like to tolerate like operating at a loss. And you're like, well, if in perpetuity this is going to be a loss, like we should.
Just hemorrhaging resources over here. Yeah.
And for some of those churches, it can be more understandable to ease out of something. But for some of these, like, These are enormous churches with enormous budgets and supposedly the ethos of servanthood and that of Christ. But it can be challenging to operate that way.
Yeah, it's an experience to go from like being in a members meeting, applauding the church for having so much money in our savings account, like being so way ahead of budget, and then being told, you know, there's like, you can't get a raise. You have to stay below the poverty level, you know? It's just...
Yeah, no, I was like, should I send them some lawyers like right now? And it's, yeah, that was just a gnarly lesson. So you transitioned, when did, and the idea is not for this to be like, oh, a commercial fully for what you do now, but I just think that it's fascinating. And the whole deconstruction, reconstruction, trying to figure out where you land. I mean, 2016 to 2020 is when a lot of this stuff all kicked off. There've been some very strange and unhelpful responses to it, but I get a lot of from the relationships that I still have that are all right with people like deeply in the evangelical, conservative, fundamentalist world is just like the best responses are that of like confusion, like what's going on with these folks? Yeah. And I would just love to hear kind of how you view it and kind of how it began and what it has evolved to.
So it started 18 months ago, and it was something, so that's when I officially started, but I had been, in a sense, I've been deconstructing since I was 16. I got excommunicated at 16. And my experience...
Excommunicated at 16? Like, were you still at home with your family who was a part of that?
Yeah,
how did
that
work?
Yeah, so...
You just didn't go to church with them because you weren't allowed to?
Well, they got excommunicated. We all get excommunicated.
Oh.
I was in a church where every year the dads and boys would go to D.C. for the Titanic banquet where they would celebrate the sinking of the Titanic. Because it was a...
Celebrate the sinking of the Titanic?
I know.
I've never heard of this. I know there's a lot of weird crap in American evangelicalism, but I don't think I've heard about this.
The chokehold the Titanic had on the Vision Forum crowd, because men laid down their lives for women and children. And so it was the women and children first Titanic banquet.
Okay.
So the whole personality of this church was that like men are providers and protectors and they exist to like take care of women and children. And then what
super
I witnessed.
Super hyper complementarian.
Hyper, hyper complementarian. Like men shouldn't read books written by women. You shouldn't have people over you in your business who are female, who could give you instructions or directions.
Shouldn't read books is wild.
It's very wild. Like they went granular, like if a woman constructed a road, it would be okay because you didn't know it. Or like, I don't know. They just like had it very granular. They had it all worked out. But then what I experienced was a predator in the church, and he had been abusing many, many children. And I felt confident that the men in my church were going to step up and, you know, protect women and children because they'd literally been singing about it and chanting about it for years. And this was their opportunity to finally do something about it. And instead, they told her she needed the wife, that she needed to go back and live with him and take all the children back home to him, or she would be excommunicated. And we were all told that we needed to forgive him because he had confessed and that we needed to act like it had never happened. So don't keep him from your kids. Don't act like it's a thing. Yeah. So that started my deconstruction because I was like,
none of them have children or not care.
No, they all had children. They all had children.
It was clever. You can come around my children.
They had 57 children each.
Sure. But they felt comfortable with their children around this guy.
Yep. In fact, they married him to one of their children eventually, like one of their daughters eventually. Gosh. The leadership did. That was a pretty, and it was interesting.
That'll get you asking some questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time. And so I started deconstructing from like the super, super hyper fundamentalism that I was a part of. And the entire time that I had been in there, I had been confused and had been asking questions and had been getting in trouble. And so now it finally felt like I was free to like, really ask those questions. And I thought, oh, I'm so excited. Now I'm going to go to a regular church with regular Christians, and they're going to love women, and they're going to take care of women, and they're going to like do the right thing. And what I have found with each successive church is like, okay, maybe it's not, you know, prairie dresses and head coverings and like terrifying sermons in the same way. It's still the same stuff everywhere I've gone. It's still the same stuff. It's like less, it's more hidden, or it might take more time of going to that church to see those things. But like the same cancer, the same lies have taken hold in all of these churches. And that has been really discouraging for a long time, and I fought it. And so my position for the last, you know, the 12 years that I was in ministry was essentially, I felt like I was just always being like, don't go down this path. I know what's at the end of this path. I've seen it. I've lived it. I've watched my friends' bodies carry the scars of this hyper-fundamentalist path. And all the churches that we'd go to, it's like they would all start going down the fundamentalist path and getting more and more conservative and patriarchal and authoritarian, high control. So then we left the church that we were at. That's what we talk about in the Bodies Behind the Bus podcast. Went to another church. We're there during 2020. It was a very wealthy church. It was the church that the governor of Missouri would go to when he would go to church. So it was very uncomfortable during 2020, during the race stuff, the COVID stuff. And that was kind of where we finally were like, okay, we need to at least take a break from ministry. And then we even tried churches not as a pastor's family, and still, again, found the same issues in every church we tried. And so at this point, we're kind of taking a break and just, you know, wrestling with our faith at home.
Like, speaking as somebody who also who did not come from quite as extreme of a background, but like somebody who came from like that fundamentalist space, like it becomes such a part of like your entire life, like part of the what can be the insidiousness of it is like that high control stuff. Like, it isn't just like one of your circles. Like, it's kind of like your whole ecosystem. So like 100%. the idea of losing, because for better and worse, and I don't think it's always malicious, but like functionally what that a lot of those systems do is kind of make themselves the totality of everybody's life and circles. And there's suspicion of those who are outside. There's self-aggrandizing. There's all sorts of stuff that kind of build up that own system so much that 90%+ of the people like couldn't even fathom leaving. Like, even Absolutely. If like you said, something horrible happens and there's a predator and the leadership does nothing about it, plenty of people are not gonna leave because it's so integral to their life.
Absolutely. And a lot of them, it's like, it's also, you know, their mom and dad go to that church, and all their siblings and their cousins and their aunts and uncles and their grandparents. And so it's like, you have to lose your entire support system to draw this line in the sand and say, I can't go down this path with you guys. And then you lose everything. You lose any access to like financial support or childcare or just having a place to go for holidays.
Those places be pleasant. I personally know exactly how that goes, and it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I see with the people that I work with is every holiday is traumatizing. Every vacation to go visit family is traumatizing. And so even your breaks aren't breaks. They're just like disrupting your nervous system so much that you need a vacation from your vacation. It's just, yeah, it's not, I think there's this idea that people deconstruct because they're tired of trying, or because they're looking for the easy way out or something comfortable.
Yeah, they want to be rebellious or whatever.
What I wish people knew is that it is so much harder than shutting up and staying. And I think a lot of us would have preferred to stay if we could have had space to ask our questions. For me, the thing is that I didn't need to deconstruct outside of the church, except that nothing that I said was allowed. Everything I said caused censoring, shunning, gossip, and I wasn't expecting that. I really thought that there was room in every church that I was in. I really trusted and believed that there was room for me to ask these questions and wrestle and maybe end up in a slightly different place, because I knew all of my positions remain orthodox. They're just not exactly the same ones that particular church is choosing. It's the fact that there isn't room for questioning that forces you to deconstruct outside of the church, because you can't stop asking the questions, or you have to basically, you know, be divorced from yourself. You have to like completely shut down your entire internal thought process and emotions and everything. And you can't last like that in a healthy way.
So when did you start? I mean, I know that in these spaces, both from talking with my wife and listening to your episode and kind of catching glimpses and through your community, like it's been such a blessing to our family and getting to hear these primarily women, but recently I'm in the men's Discord group where we're getting that going a little bit there, but just to hear how much of a blessing it is for these folks. And I know you were doing that before you left it and kind of found a outside the church, like outside a local church, like being the ministry or like having people over at your home and this or that. Like, how did it is a ministry, like your service and ministry to folks, kind of holding space for folks who are beginning to ask these questions or in various stages rather of this process. Kind of how did that begin?
Yeah. So like I said, I was in like ministry in a church setting for 12 years and ran various small groups, community groups, Sunday schools. And I feel like a lot of that was practice for what I'm doing now. I saw things that I didn't want to be a part of, ways of teaching or, just the high control stuff. I think part of it was I was just never confident enough to try and control someone else. And then just seeing how, man, just giving people a place where they feel like their voice matters and that they are safe, like there's no bad questions and we can talk about anything, you know, how much that changes things for people. I got to see that. And then I also got to experience in the church setting, that being seen as a threat and constantly having to fight the system to allow those spaces to continue and trying to walk that line. So the last church that we were at, it was our pandemic church. And so I had an entire year where I didn't have to go to church. And
a lot of people just kind of left quietly because they're like, oh, we're not meeting in person unless you're at like a crazy place. That's like, we are going to like at the height of COVID, like, forget this all. Like, we're going to be like most all churches at least shifted or changed or something. And I know a lot of people just kind of left quietly.
Yeah. There's a lot of people in the work that I do. That's their story. Or like they went through another version of that story is like they went through hell during COVID, like whether they lost a child or, had a cancer diagnosis, whatever. And no one contacted them. No one.
And the whole world fell apart too. So like, a lot of families, like, unless literally everybody is in perfect lockstep ideologically with like, no, like a lot of families really went through it. And you talked about support system. Not only did COVID exacerbate like religious community issues, like it was like every fabric of society was kind of being shot. Like all the pain points were getting pressed kind of at once.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we already have a society that isn't great at community and support systems in the first place.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot on the show. The current American whole deal is not very, it's not healthy and it's not sustainable. Like, no, the
people
community
keep trying to find the source of our mental health crisis, and I'm like, it's pretty obvious. We're all drowning, and there's no one, there's no support, no one to help us.
And certain powers that be in certain groups have almost made that like to think like, oh, we need to work on community is like somehow going against your best interest. Like, oh, how can we support programs that bring people together and help as many people as possible with core basic needs. A lot of people have it in their heads that that is somehow not in their best interest. And a lot of times, somehow, their religious and spiritual identities get caught up in that too. And it's like, it's very wild. It's very, very wild.
Oh, and that's the other thing about deconstruction is, at least, I mean, from like the background that I come from, I have to deconstruct freaking everything. Politics are involved. My relationship to the medical field is involved.
Oof.
Parenting is involved. Marriage is involved. My relationship to gender is involved. It's like, it's not every time I think, okay, I'm really getting somewhere with my deconstruction. It's like, no, there's just like eight other doors I haven't walked in, like even like opened yet. So I had a lot of space to, I think my most intense deconstruction happened before and during the pandemic. And then a year at like, so I didn't go to church for the whole first year of the pandemic. And then started teaching Sunday school at the church that we were at. And it was basically a deconstruction class. We just started at the beginning of the Bible and just worked through, because I, in that year of not going to church, I had started to see the Bible very differently. I had learned a lot about biblical context, believe it or not, is more than just being like, oh, these people are ancient. They don't have electricity. There's way more to understanding the culture and context that the Bible is written into. People don't tell stories the same way our culture tells stories. Other cultures tell stories in different ways. And not every culture has like beginning, middle, and end, and just different things like that. And so it was a really beautiful experience at that church to be able to, man, just like see people start to see the goodness of God in a way, and for myself to see the goodness of God in a way that I'd never had access to before. And then we ended up renting a house, and in the height of the housing crisis that was 2022, our landlords wanted to sell the house. We became homeless. And it was very stressful. So we ended up having to move away. And it took a long time for David to find a job. And so I'd had this idea for this thing that I wanted to do. I'd already been yapping my head off on Instagram, but I really wanted to connect with people and be able to say things that I didn't feel comfortable saying online. And I just wanted to like dig in deeper with an actual group of specific people. But I didn't have the confidence to do it. The actual reason that I finally pulled the trigger and offered what I call cohorts, which are essentially focused small groups. It's 12-week courses that people get to process where they're at on different topics of their faith together. But the reason that I finally pulled the trigger on it was because David, we were like running out of our savings and David hadn't found a job yet. And so I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to try this thing. I felt really confident with it, but I don't normally take bets on myself. I did it, and it's been going for the last 18 months, and I can't believe how good it's been and how safe it's been after so many, 30 years of not being safe in religious spaces, to finally get to talk about God and the Bible and my life and it be safe. And it to feel so easy with people and to get to meet such incredible people like your wife, it's just been a really beautiful thing.
Everybody who I have met in the group, all the ladies, they're great.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to just kind of see, both personally in our home and a couple of them I knew online. And one of them, I'm sure you've probably heard the story. I don't know if I want to say names exactly, but there's one gal here in Kansas City who I already knew. And then over a period of time, my wife's like, hey, do you know this person? I was like, oh, yeah. And then we found out she was a part of your group as well. And she's become like a deeply involved person in our life. And it's fantastic.
That makes me so happy. So happy. I online community is amazing. But you always want it to be in person too. And so when it finally is able to like cross into that and like have real world in person effects, it just makes me so, so happy.
Well, and the people who I'm talking to online, I am low-key trying to recruit a few people over here to Kansas City. Because Kansas City, it's a lot of things, but Kansas City's wonderful. And me, with my networking, I'm like, guys, I can hook everybody up with jobs. I can find you guys houses. Like, we should. Kansas City.
Cost of living's low.
Yeah, we can have a little hub here. And, like, you get enough good people. Like, not only is there a wonderful community in Kansas City, I feel like there's a lot of space for communities like that to be, like, embodied here. Like, I think the use of technology for people who can't travel or things like that. But I mean, there's a lot of opportunity here. And I'm personally very excited just to see what happens with you moving back here. I know my wife is very excited to hang out with you sometime.
Yeah, we are going to hang out so much. I've talked to Jonna about this.
Her over here too. Arizona's stupid. Why would
she like, will never leave the West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've only been to Arizona once and like it was 115 degrees. Like, yeah. Why?
I don't know. But I told, because they've had so many episodes of their podcast out of Kansas City. Churches in Kansas City are not doing well. But
there's
that's
a lot,
actually
yeah.
a perfect setting for us because there's a lot of people who get it, you know? There's a lot of people who are like, no, I've seen the man behind the curtain, you know?
Yeah.
You were asking about my kids' ages.
Yeah. What's the ranges? What's the range?
So my oldest is about to turn 11 and my youngest is 4.
Okay. And how many do you have, 3 or 4?
I have 4. My oldest is a girl and the rest are boys.
Okay, 4 to 11 and you got 4. Okay. Yeah, no, we got 2. We got a 3 and a 5-year-old.
They are so cute.
They really are. And they're a lot, but they're phenomenal. I was telling you before we recorded, tonight they were putting me through it. But they're just people. And honestly, like trying to be more gracious, like my philosophy of parenting has evolved and shifted. Some of that, like inner programming, is really hard. But then when you're like, what kind of parent do I want them to remember in 20 years? And genuinely, like, what kind of parent do I want to actually be? Like, I love my children. Like, I want to be a good, and not that some people are like, oh, like if you don't like abuse your kids and be a dictator, like they're gonna go bad. And it's like, no, man, like I grew up, it doesn't sound like anywhere near as conservative as you with some of the stories you told, but I grew up in a conservative, fundamentalist-ish environment. And I saw a lot of kids when they turned 16, 17, 18, 19 and left the house. They went wild. They went wild and they like knew nothing and had no life experience. And that is not the children I want to raise.
Absolutely. And it's been really cool. My kids, my two oldest kids have like, you know, they're moving into the like more like middle school years. And the things that like, I don't know, I almost feel like, okay, so you have your kids who are in more authoritarian households and they are so good and so prim and proper, so composed. And my kids are feral, but I'm finding that as my kids are getting older, they are catching up and they were able to learn self-control like genuinely and authentically for themselves instead of just like being terrified of mom and dad.
Well, yeah. And it's so interesting how that goes. Like, again, maybe I talk to my wife sometimes. Sometimes she feels like I have rose-colored glasses, but sometimes I think I just lucked out in some of the ways with my community growing up. There was the discipline in my life and in my home and in my family, but like, I don't think I was ever afraid. But like, you see kids who, I mean, in some of those churches and some of the ones where I came from, where like, you see all the time, where like, fear is the motivator. And that kind of stems from or is intertwined some with like, that's how they really view their relationship with God. And that's been, for me, like, I haven't done a ton of deconstruction in the way that some people do. I've definitely shifted. What I was always taught and what was always preached was like, I grew up in a big reform circle. It was like, always be reforming, or the like, oh, be the Berean, like search it out. And then there was like a wall though of, hey, like, shouldn't we always be like reforming and refining and questioning to like make sure we're right? Don't you guys talk about sin and depravity and like like the human mind can be easily da 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 da. But like then you refute then like, but also somehow like you've got the perfect system that don't ask any questions to a certain point. Like, how does that work? But all that to say, like, that is under the umbrella of, in a lot of ways, like a God who they view like rules through fear. Like you can say God is love, but if like your main driving thing is being afraid of God's wrath, and not to say that like that is not a part of the puzzle in any way, but if the main thing is like, oh man, like I'm afraid of getting demolished by God who like made me, set my parameters, knows me, and supposedly loves me, like how does that all work together, guys?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fear and shame are the motivators. And like, again, this is a big piece of my deconstruction was realizing that the spaces that I was a part of, the religious groups that I was a part of, would give lip service to quote unquote Christian liberty. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you like took up that space and like with confidence trusted grace, and that like it was okay for you to like operate in Christian liberty on any, like, again, just like holding a different, still orthodox view about something in the Bible, it was like immediately there would be attempts at like making you anxious and feeling ashamed. Yeah, that was like a big piece for me, was when I realized actually like the healthier that I get, the more I find peace in my relationship with God and take him up on all of like the grace and freedom that he has given me, the more I'm on the outs with my religious community, because they actually want me to be anxious. They want me to anxiously read my Bible every day. They want me to anxiously go through the formulaic prayers, you know, acts, what is it? Adoration, confession, thanksgiving, supplication.
Yeah.
And a huge part of what I've always done is give people permission that if this is killing you, if this isn't working for you, if, hey, I'm neurodivergent, if it doesn't work for you, that's okay. It's not, first of all, it's not even in the Bible. Secondly, there are other ways and there are other things that you can do that are still like having you, you know, reach for your creator, but that was never okay. And they just like wanted the reins to be so tight and the leash like so short.
Well, and so that is another thing that's come up in my prep. My life has been crazy right now. So didn't get to prep as much as I would have preferred, but I reached out to, because I have relationships to various degrees with a number of mostly ladies, just because the guys thing is so new. But several of the people who I know, I reached out to, and it's just like, hey, talking with Margaret soon, like, tell me some of your thoughts. Like, what were you expecting? How did those expect, like, what was your experience? Like, what would you say to people who are curious about it? And I reached out to like four or five people. And one of the two big common themes was that like the safety and the security, along with both from you, and because you're kind of the tone setter, they both found in you and then in the group, like the space and the safety to ask those questions, like just that's okay. And then like empathy and validation for each step of the journey without trying to control the journey. Like none of us are actually in control of anybody else. And it was just like, I kept hearing from people. It's like, Margaret, like she will start like, I don't know what the structure of the 12th. It sounds basically like the fundamentals of the faith, but like with deconstruction, which is great. Like for people who are adults and have never been allowed to ask those questions and then saying, hey, the church has all these problems. I don't know. Like the people like railing against deconstruction, they're like, oh, why are these people leaving the church? And it's like, because of you guys, because of the system, because of the problems, like you can't just say, hey, like we're like, and their theology doesn't even support the stuff that they say, mm-hmm. where it's like, stay here, shut up, hold the company line with like no divergence at all. And then I'll like, but also we're fallen, we're depraved, da 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 da. No man can do true good or whatever. It's like, it's so messed up. But if that's like your your safety social net, if that's like your childcare, if in some ways like the people in that community have helped get you work and a livelihood, or even just like your social circle and friends. You can get to your mid, late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, and like not know people outside the church. And frankly, as if it's like, if you're a woman, the overwhelming odds are that like you weren't given kind of the same building blocks that your male counterparts have of like self-sufficiency. So if you're a woman, you get to your mid 20s, 30s even, and like you could literally have like never been allowed to ask those questions, not have any real education or training or social whatever, and then you see your church completely be hypocritical and fall apart, and you're like, well, I don't want to be a part of it anymore, but like, what the heck is my life now? What do I mean? There's the cosmic question of, oh, what do I believe about all these spiritual things? But then like, what is my actual life right now?
Absolutely. Yeah. You're just bailing water, you know, trying to get through the day in the middle of like whatever number recession we're on and, you know, the pandemic and then just life and everyone's got stuff going on. A big part of what I do in my work is like, I don't want there to be, if people love Jesus and are struggling to find a way to stay with Jesus because of the things that they have seen in the church and, you know, just different, like, I just feel like we create a lot of unnecessary barriers to having a relationship with God, right? We say like, you have to believe in literal 6-day creation. First of all, that wasn't even a category for people. That wasn't even a category for like many, many hundreds, thousands of years of people following Yahweh. You know, we say, yeah, there's four orthodox positions on hell, but only this one is the right orthodox position on hell. Just different things like that. And it's like, listen.
And as if any of those are even close to like the main thing.
Right? First of all, they're not even primary issues. But, you know, why are we creating these extra hurdles for people? Like, why not make the table longer? And the thing is, it's like the Bible lets the table be that long, but we're like arbitrarily cutting people out and then yelling at them for leaving. Yeah. So it's just a lot of permission giving. And like, people don't even, like, most people don't even know. Most people, evangelicalism has so dominated their experience of and relationship with Christianity that they don't even know that there are Christians all over the world and throughout history who have believed other things. And so again, a big piece of the work that I do is just bringing like historical context in. Hey, listen, this actually wasn't even a category people had for most of church history, or, you know, this wasn't the primary position for a long time. It has been for the last 200 years of American history, but it wasn't before that. It doesn't make me a lot of friends, but I really like doing it.
Well, because I mean, this is important, and it's such a shame that churches don't do this. But I mean, just from the firsthand testimonies I've heard of the people gone through this, I was like, I think this is important. And actually, weirdly, like, I don't know if are there other people in that space who kind of do what you do as well?
The deconstruction space is stressful because there's no oversight. And what you see happening a lot is...
You could start another organization or denomination.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. It's so stressful. I like feel like so anxious partnering with anyone because they all end up going crazy. Because here's the thing. You can't just deconstruct the literal theologies. You have to deconstruct a way of thinking, fundamentalism, this constant binary. This is right. This is wrong. Everything is, there's two options and there's extremes. And so you end up with people who are deconstructing and they say, well, if now this is my view on hell, and if you don't hold to this view on hell, you're out. Or, you know, if you can't say a
fundamental, like the essence of just fundamentalistic thinking, it is really hard to get over.
It is really hard.
Period. But then if you are raised in it strongly, it's very easy to just pendulum to be a fundamentalist about a different set of views.
Absolutely. I would say that Tia Levings does a lot of work talking about what fundamentalist thinking is and, you know, how to identify when you're again engaging in fundamentalist thinking like that, legalistic thinking.
So just with all of the like straight up like horrible wickedness that you have experienced that has been targeted towards you guys, whether it's been malicious or not, like the horrible things you and your husband and your family have experienced, along with the men and women who are part of your groups, like your experience now, you have seen and currently engage with a lot of people who have received and experienced the very worst mm-hmm. of religion and spirituality in this country. And I just wonder, like, how do you cultivate hope, and how do you try to avoid bitterness?
Yeah, it's the people that I work with. They are, first of all, the most loving group of people. Like, the way they show up for each other and for me and hold space for each other and respond, like, so with so much wisdom and kindness and also respect and boundaries to one another when it's trivial, complaints, as well as the really, really heavy, hard stuff of life that's going on. It's so beautiful. And then, you know, a lot of people that I work with have been through much worse than I've been through, and they are so good, and there's no explanation to it. There's no explanation for it. They just, you know, it's funny because I think, like, right now we're in a time when our culture's storytelling really wants to make a backstory for the villain and show, like, how they got there and, like, oh, sure, all these awful things happened to them. And listen, I love me a complex villain. But also, I have, like, a complicated relationship with that now because it's not an excuse, because I see every day people who've been through hell and have had abuse be, like, the defining feature of their life, and they're still, like, fiercely good and kind and soft and willing to trust and be vulnerable, and it just doesn't make sense. But it gives me so much hope that the bad things in life, the evil, the brokenness, it's not going to win, and it doesn't get to define us. So yeah, maybe the church is sick, but I do believe that we are on a path searching for goodness, and that we're going to find it. And I can see us finding it, even if it's just in each other online right now. But like we've been talking about, like there's real world stuff happening. Yeah. I'm so excited for Kansas City.
Well, the church is not a corporation. Like the church, like capitalized TC, the church is not a series of buildings or corporate entities. Like the church is the body of Christ, is the individual and local body, like localized groups of saints being the hands and feet of God, like loving God and loving their neighbors. Like that is the church. It's not just the building with the steeples and the stained glass and all that. And a lot of those can be good, but it's so frustrating to me sometimes when I think about like hearing you talk about it now, but just hearing my wife talk about it, hearing my other new friends talk about it, like that's the work of the church, creating community, creating space to where people feel safe. People feel and are safe, because some churches are good at making you feel safe, and then you open up with your vulnerabilities or you get sick, and then they're like, oh, like not really. Like this isn't actually a safe space for you, but this creating of a safe space to where people are loved unconditionally, people are nurtured, people are encouraged, and people know that like there is a place for them, that there is love for them, that there's goodness for them, like wherever they are. Not, and how it's so annoying when I hear people caricaturize that as, oh, like you just want to give everybody license to do whatever they want. And it's like you said, these people have gone through hell and are trying to hold on to their humanity. Many of them are trying to hold on to their faith, but not even just some sort of theological, spiritual thing, but like their faith in humanity and their their desire to pursue goodness and to love their neighbors. Like that is a godly aspiration. And just the fact that because of American fundamentalism, that vital and necessary and beautiful work of the church can't be done in many churches. Like that's just mind-boggling and just immensely frustrating. But it also does give me hope that it's happening. Like you don't have to be within the walls of a church to do the work of the church. And I'm very encouraged to see the work that's done. Like you've had a front row seat to the last 18 months. I don't know how many groups have gone through, but you've seen that and you will continue to. I would imagine that I know how my wife relates with some of these people. I would imagine many of these people will be somewhat involved in our lives in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think a lot of these groups have become each other's found family and they're like starting to do holidays together. Oh my gosh, it makes me literally so weepy.
That is like the best.
What they lost, they're getting back, you know, but it's like it's more real and it's more safe and it's more beautiful and there's more space for them to show up whole. And, you know, we're not trying to keep some sort of party line, but we're like, you know, working towards each other's like good and flourishing. I don't know. It's been really beautiful. And I really, really believe that that was what the church was supposed to be all along.
Yes.
I mean, I could spend, this is literally what Cohorts is about, is just like, well, it's part of what Cohorts is about. Like, I believe that this is what the church is supposed to do. Yes. I believe this is the work of the church. So I say I'm outside of the church, but that's like just because that's how people think of it. But I think I'm in the church, yeah. You know? I think this is not the church.
Yeah, no, it is. That's exactly, like, yeah, that was the frustration. And that was maybe me just venting a little bit, but it's like, no, that is exactly the work of the church.
Yeah, like something I've been thinking about a lot lately is the term sanctuary. One of the first times it's talked about is in the Old Testament law, and it's literally talking about if you commit murder, like you actually committed it, you're guilty, you can get sanctuary in the tabernacle, the church, the temple, whatever, from the law. Like that's the kind of safety, that's the level of safe place that the church should be, is like, yeah, we are broken, we are messed up, we are falling.
I don't know about the actual literal 6 days of Genesis. Like, that's the stupidest.
The Bible's literally like, you can commit murder and we're going to have a space for you and we're going to like talk to you and like you're going to get to a place.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to hold your hands while you go and like take responsibility for your actions. You know what I mean? And it's also one thing that's been really comforting is seeing how religious abuse is a theme throughout the Bible. My favorite chapter of the Bible is Ezekiel 34. And it is this incredible prophetic passage talking about the shepherds, the essentially pastors of the day, who were eating their sheep and selling their sheep and abusing their sheep. And my favorite part is where the passage talks about, so of course, the sheep ran away from the sheep pen where there were wolves attacking and there were snakes in the grass and the shepherds were selling them willy-nilly to anyone. And so like God says, of course they went into the mountains and they're scattered, but I'm going to find every single one of them and I'm going to bring them back and I'm going to make them safe. And I'm going to hold the shepherds, the false shepherds, accountable. So this isn't new.
Yeah.
Religious abuse is something my husband says a lot is, anything that is good, like that's powerfully good, can be manipulated and twisted and used for its power, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's so insidious because power can corrupt. It's very easy for power to corrupt because like the very roles of power tend to attract people who would abuse it. And in those fundamentalist, not even in like hyper crazy fundamentalism, but like in a lot of churches, like the trusting like atmosphere and kind of hand in hand with people who maybe don't have a whole ton of street smarts, like it's very easy for the wrong people to get, I mean, that's what one of the strongest thoughts I had listening to your episode was, how in the world did the head guy become the head guy in the first place? Like, how in the world did that happen? But also, like, I've seen it. I've seen that plenty of times too.
Yeah, I think there's, there's so much there. I think two things. One, I do think that sometimes there's a personality type that we just like. And I have seen this happen time and time again, where like someone goes from not even being a Christian, like just living whatever, you know, they're going to make it part of their story. Like, oh, I was like such a druggie, or I was like, whatever, like a bad person. That's the way they tell the story. And then I get saved. Like less than 2 years later, they're in seminary and it's like everything's being handed to them on a golden platter. It's like they're the one that's chosen to like do this internship and this one and this one. And it's like, why is everything falling on this person? It's always that person that ends up being abusive later down the road. And it's like, we're recognizing something in these men that isn't actually maturity and character. And like,
it's charisma a lot of times.
It's charisma.
Well, it's, and it's wild too, because partnered with like that, there is like, a lot of them think of themselves and kind of treat it as a corporation, but then the suspicion of like experts in systems, like when you're interviewing for like some high level jobs, a lot of times you have to undergo some sort of like analysis and like, are you okay? Like, are you functional, a functional human? And like with the suspicion of psychology or whatever it is, like they're just like, oh, is this guy kind of charming? Okay. Like, it's yours. There's no, like, deep investigation.
The SBC requires psychological evaluations to send people onto the mission field, but not for the pastorate.
And so they do require it for missionaries. Like, if you're going to go somewhere and we're basically like, if we're going to give you money and we can't observe you, let's get you a psychological evaluation.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then another piece is like, okay, so if you're a pastor in a church, and you want to loosen the reins a little bit, you're not going to keep your job. You're not going to feed your kids. Like you they have to follow the party line just as much as anybody else.
That's so the actual experience versus how people try to view themselves. It's like, oh no, like you said with Christian liberty, it's like, oh yeah, like we're one of the good ones. Like we're one of the cool, normal ones. It's like, yeah, if you like literally think and do exactly what everybody else does, your experience will be cool and normal. Not the case for if you're a person just trying to ask some normal questions.
Yep, definitely not. It's funny. It's funny the things that are like the don't ask that question. Like, don't ask if women can like do more in church. Don't ask that question. You know, don't ask about creation. Don't ask about hell.
The creation one is kind of baffling. It's like, who cares? Like,
literally, who cares?
And that's because, I mean, I used to say, and I still do to a degree, where it's like, I think it is important to read and to study and to try to like to dig into important topics. But like, life is short. We got a lot of stuff going on. Like, I'm not gonna like creation happened. Creation is. Existence happened. Here we are. Like, what's the deal, guys? Like, people literally building their whole lives on like a Western post-Enlightenment understanding of Genesis. It's like, okay, I guess, but not really. Like, if you're interested in that and that's like your hobby, like maybe okay, but you can't be like holding up other people to that. And also like that's a very narrow anyway. This isn't a
and I also Genesis think you just podcast. Miss out on so much of the beauty of that passage when you finally are able to like let go of our current cultural like how we read this and are able to like start to just barely scratch the surface, right? Because I'm not an expert by any means, but like just the little bit that I've learned about, you know, what those passages would have meant to the original audience. It's like, man, we missed so much of like the beauty, but also like the fun of
some of those churches, like the better, like I genuinely think I have a lot of very like positive feelings towards the church that I was raised in. Like we preached like this was written to a different people and like we need to get in the context this and that, but then there's usually a wall where that stops. Mm-hmm. And that's very frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
And with some people, like I mentioned this, I don't know, a few episodes ago. Oh, back when I had Trevor on for the listeners who heard that one. But like, I have people who I thought were like deeply involved in my life. And the deconstruction, if you even want to call it that, that like I personally have undergone, like it was not drastic. Still a big Bible guy, still a big striving for holiness guy. Like, but like even the fact, I don't even know what it, honestly, with a couple of the guys who I used to be extremely close with, who now like no, like guys who are like in my wedding, who are like no contact with me, making me kind of feel the distance. It's like, I would imagine that there's probably a lot of like projection and characterizing. Cause like, yeah, we probably don't agree on everything, but like very much still like, I'm not raging against all these things at all. Like,
yeah,
if some people walk away for a time, it's like, or if some people end up walking away, like that should not be a, oh, like they went out from us because they were never of us. It should be like, you guys should like, I mean, I'm not the biggest on shame. I think shame has its place, but I think that should be the place of shame to be like, you sent that person away because you couldn't handle reality. You couldn't like, you couldn't meet the standard of God's love and you sent that person away. Like that's on you, church. that is not a judgment on the person that walked away.
Yeah, well, it's like what I experience all the time where it's like people acting as though, I don't know, I'm the worst thing, you know, I'm like, I don't know, the worst thing they can imagine, right? And it's like, I'm literally doing everything you want your people to do. I'm literally like talking about how God is good all the time to people who like aren't sure what they think about that. And
people who otherwise would like never go into a church and have that conversation.
Right? I don't know. It's just... But the problem is, and I know what the problem they have with me, which is that I leave the door open for people to make up their own minds, you know?
Yeah.
And some of my best friends are completely deconverted, and that's okay. And I still feel very, very close to them, and I love them so much, and I trust them, and Have you read Jesus and John Wayne? Because I feel like that's the one thing that has helped me like kind of understand how we got to where we are.
Yeah, and I listened to that during the pandemic. We weren't able to snag a slot on her time slot to like have her on the show, but listened to it and listened to her podcast series on the Holy Post. We've had some of those folks on the show before. But yeah, no, it's so blatant too. Like it seems so clear. If you're not in like totally drunk the Kool-Aid or in complete denial, it's like, no, like there, it's very clear how a lot of churches got to the way they are. And then therefore, because it's clear, it's like some of the antidotes and some of the steps are like maybe hard culturally to implement, but it's not like a mystery. It's not like, how did we get here and what do we do? It's like, but that's how we got here. And because that's how we got here, what we should do, like some of the first steps are pretty obvious, but they're just impossible under the structures of that kind of fundamentalism. So people kind of have to leave in order to do those things.
Yeah. I was raised in like a very classical education. Like you're supposed to be the Joshua generation. You need to be the best in your field. You need to be like very educated. That like was
secretly
boring.
Convert the whole country.
Yeah. That was warring with the patriarchy. That was like, don't educate women. Cause what's the point? Cause you're going to stay home. But anyway, that's my background. And they would always talk about history and the importance of knowing your history, but also twisting history and rewriting history. And all the curriculums stopped at World War II. So we never like learned what happened after that. And you know what happened after that? Like today, we're recording, is the 50-year anniversary of women being able to get a credit card without a co-signer who was male. And like,
I saw that.
The creation thing, that only happened in the 50s too. Like,
well, then you also don't have to deal with civil rights or Vietnam or any of the messy things that so clearly set up a lot of the chaos that we're dealing with now.
Reagan's war on drugs, like all that stuff.
Well, anyway, Hitler's a very clear, obvious bad guy, but then also kind of getting reclaimed by a lot of those folks too now as well. So it's quite a thing to see some of that mental gymnastics.
It's interesting the stories that, like the Titanic, right? That seemed to like really prove a point to the community that I grew up in. World War II, man, that is doing overtime work for certain people in their philosophy. As I think us as like the victors and the heroes. But there's just these different moments in history or stories of people that like we just keep telling and creating this mythology. And it's not history, it's mythology, you know?
Yeah. Well, the last couple episodes we did actually have been touching on that American myth, and it's very powerful.
Mm. Another one, Jamestown. That was a big one. Like, if you don't work, you don't eat. And that whole idea, that's a huge, huge story that gets told in the American mythology. And we have people who don't want to take care of people who can't work or don't work.
And a lot of the most successful people get there by exploiting the actual work of others who they make sure can't have housing and education and healthcare. Anyway, when I saw your story today about it being the 50th anniversary that of a woman being able to get a credit card, thinking of all the people who I know in like their 50s and 60s and 70s. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, that's crazy. That is crazy.
We had to fight for the right to vote. And we talk about that. That was only 100 years ago. But 50 years ago, a single woman couldn't buy a house. A widow couldn't buy a house.
Anyway, we're going. Yeah, no, a lot of problems, And the spaces just need to be safe to have those conversations, because we're not damning everybody because of a bad thing, but it's like you need to acknowledge it's just like whether it's in construction or health or whatever your field is, like if something is deeply broken, it needs to be fixed, or like everything else kind of crumbles. Like, you can't build on a bad foundation. And these are the same people who would say, oh yeah, can't build on a bad foundation. Yet it's like, well then, hey guys, let's work on our foundation. Right. Margaret, we do have one segment we like to do here on The Substance at the end, and that's Substance Shout Out. So would love to hear, what are you reading? What are you listening to? What are you watching? And it doesn't have to be extremely substantive, but books, television, podcasts, albums, what is either bringing joy or edification to your life that you want to share with folks? And feel free to pick a few.
Okay. So, been watching through the Oscar nominees from this year.
Nice. It was a great film year last year, and I saw so few.
Man, there were so many good ones. I loved American Fiction, was really good. And Society of the Snow. Have you watched that one yet?
No, that's on Netflix, right? That looks very good.
I think so. Yeah, it was so good. They took a crew up into the Andes.
Yeah.
And they filmed on location.
Like, and that's foreign as well, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm very pro foreign subtitle movie. It's just like, with all the hecticness right now, sitting down and reading subtitles, I don't always have the attention span for that. But that looks very good. Looks very harrowing.
Yeah, it was very good. And then we just finished watching Beef. It was so good.
That looks phenomenal.
First of all, what's his name? Steven Yeun? I love him. He's so good. I didn't expect it to be so moving. It was really, really good. It's very gritty. Very, you know. But if you can handle that, it's really good. So I'm reading this series. Okay, two things. One, I'm a huge R.F. Kuang fan. Okay. So she did Babel and Yellowface and the Poppy Wars. The Poppy Wars is my favorite. It's
okay.
This trilogy, Chinese mythology, shaman. It's very good. Also gritty. There's a theme with the things that I like. But then I also like absurdist stuff.
Okay.
And so the book that I'm currently reading is called No Country for Old Gnomes. And it's ridiculous. It's just silly. And it's like a little fantasy. But it's very fun.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. I will Beef has been on my list ever, like, before it came out. I was like, I love everybody involved in this. This looks great. And then Anna's like, I might want to watch that. So it got put on hold and we've never started it. But it looks very good.
We just stay
good.
Up too late.
There's also, we talk about this some on the show too, just the frustration of like the endless hose of nonstop content. I feel like every week, two or three full series drop on streaming. And then you got
Have you seen the numbers for publishing? Like just the numbers of books published from year to year?
I'm sure.
It's awful. I used to want to write a book. Now sustainable. I kind of don't want to write a book. So I'm just
and
like,
you spend 2 or 3 years like pouring your heart and soul to a thing that, like, if you're not Stephen King, like, are people going to read it?
So many of my friends go through this because it used to be that the publishing company would handle the marketing for you. Now you have to do it yourself.
Oof.
And so you have to market yourself. You don't get to just write the book. And what writer is also good at marketing? We want to be in a room and write. Well,
Trevor and I, my former co-host, talk about that. I don't know if we talked about that much on the air, but it's our frustration of, it seems like a lot, not that they're all bad writers, but it seems like publishing companies just go after famous people with platforms because they know that's what will sell versus like creating a market who want to read great writing and then finding great writers and then marketing that work. It's like, find somebody who already basically is a marketing machine and get them to write something halfway decent and then sell that because they've got 500,000 followers and like they're all gonna buy it.
And you have these like serial authors who just write the same story with different characters over and over and over again, you know, and that has its place. I like a comfort read like anybody else, but...
Well, everybody's trying to make their money in this current economy, but yeah, no, you want to read? Yeah, I'm with you.
Like, where's the next Lord of the Rings? Seriously.
Excellent. I will, I'll be sure to add those in the show notes, and I very much look for... I'm sure that I will love Beef. And then when it swept all the awards, I was like, we gotta watch that sometime.
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of Parasite.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, which is also really, really good.
But it is really like, interesting that for some reason, I'm very glad for it, but it's like, all right, like we're going to actually let Asian creators like tell their own like good stories now for some reason. Like, I'll take it.
And I'm also, my biggest fandom is Ghibli.
I need to get on that.
Asians telling incredible stories that are very, like, very along the themes of deconstruction. Honestly, like, I feel like I have found like, This is like speaking to me on a deep level. It's all about like, there's a lot of pacifism and like dangers of technology. Sure. And I don't know. It's there's a lot there.
Well, excellent, Margaret. Well, thank you for it was nice to actually sit down and talk with you.
Me too.
This was great. And I look forward to continuing to see the fruit of what you've done like in the lives of people and just kind of seeing what God does, what we're able to do when you guys move here. Very eager and excited.
Awesome. I am too. Thank you.
So there you go. That was Margaret. What a nice time. And after we recorded, my wife came down and we got to talk to her more. Very excited to have her here very soon in Kansas City. If you are in Kansas City, which I know that since we're a Kansas City-based show, we've got a few listeners there. I believe she's got a retreat coming up next year. in Kansas City. So you guys can look out for that. If anybody is interested in learning more about what she does, you can find her on Instagram. And if you want to learn more about her cohort programs or any of that, you can go visit her Instagram. Yeah, very, very excited to have her just in person around here more. Just so grateful for what she's done. And like I said, while I was speaking with her, I know several people who have gone through her program and have just seen the relief and the joy and the lifelong friendships. What really does look like what are going to be lifelong friendships come from going through this process. So very grateful for the space that Margaret is creating for folks to grow. This isn't about like leaving the faith or this or that. It's about people who were in high control religious spaces who never were able to develop as people of faith, as individuals, and people who don't really have any sense of themselves being in a place that's safe to be like, oh, who am I? What am I? Like, what do I believe about XYZ? And I just think that that is invaluable. So very grateful for Margaret's work. Like we say at the top, one of the best ways to support The Substance, if it is something you enjoy, is to leave us a rating and review. If you're on Apple, take 20 seconds, write a sentence or two about what you like about the show. And if you're on Apple or Spotify, it's very easy to just hit that 5-star button. Recently, this is a little soapbox, recently, pretty sure Apple deleted some of our reviews. We were over 100. And I checked this past week when we had an episode come out, and we were at 88. So I'm not sure what that's about. don't want to be a social media conspiracy weirdo, but we definitely lost reviews. Not sure how that happened. But yeah, anytime you share the show as well on your various platforms, or if you message a show, if this is a show that you maybe feel, I'm not sure about the people in my circle still yet seeing me share this, text this to your friends, message this to your friends. I really think what she's doing is very important, and that's why I invited her on the show. If you want to partner with us and you have a couple of bucks, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/thesubstancepod. You can sign up for a couple bucks a month. We have $3, $5, $10 tiers, and that just really helps us keep the show going. Actually, we don't have an announcement yet, but there are some exciting plans in the mix to both expand and shift a few things here at The Substance. So stay tuned for that. But if you want to be a part of that, you can do that there. Or if you want to just send us a couple bucks and not do a monthly deal, you can do that on Cash App at $TheSubstancePod. I haven't done credits in a little while, but as always, want to say thank you to editor Dave for our show's editing and production. And thank you to my wife, Anna Marinello, for our graphic design on social media. And a reminder that editor Dave is getting ready to depart the show. So if you send us some money on Cash App, specifically for editor Dave, maybe put a little note in there. Would love to give him a few bucks just as a thank you for all of his work over the last year or so before he leaves us. Well, that's been the show, and I've been your host, Philip Marinello, and we hope to see you here next time on The Substance.